Good Tuesday afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside our ESPN studios here in Northern Nevada. Happy to be with you on a cloudy Tuesday, May 19th. But nonetheless, it's a good day. We got something going on in sports. Obviously, there's always some news or something to talk about. And it is Tuesday, so we'll have a shortened Spencer Wilson show today. Starting at 2:30, like we've been doing the last few Tuesdays. We'll have that special edition of the Coach's Show with John Ramey and some of his guests. So that'll start today again at 2:30. But coming up today on the Spencer Wilson Show, we're going to talk episode 10 of The Last Dance. Obviously, as that aired over the weekend on Sunday, we talked about episode 9 yesterday. Going to just talk about episode 10 today, and then also take a look at some events that happened on this day in sports history. But first, more Formula One news, which is after really not having a whole lot going on, as we start to kind of inch towards our next hopeful starting date for the 2020 Formula One season, which is July 5th, when they hope to run the Austrian Grand Prix without fans. But since we've been kind of working our way towards that date, more and more news has come out about driver changes. Obviously, the first big change was Sebastian Vettel and Ferrari announcing that they will not continue their partnership into 2021. And then the news that Carlos Sainz is going to replace Sebastian Vettel at Ferrari. And then the news that Daniel Ricciardo will then replace Carlos Sainz at McLaren, which has now left a seat open at Renault for next season. And then we got news yesterday from this man's agent that he has, quote, detoxed and is ready for a Formula One return, and that man is Fernando Alonso. Of course, not somebody that is, you know, new to anybody that's been a Formula One fan. Obviously, he was and still is the only Spaniard to win a Formula One championship. In fact, he's won two in his career, won them back-to-back in 2005 and 2006 when driving for Renault. And was also, of course, known as the man that dethroned Michael Schumacher. Of course, Schumacher won his third through his seventh championship, those five titles in a row from 2000 to 2004, until Fernando Alonso came along and essentially ended the reign of Michael Schumacher, and then, of course, won two of his own. But his big issue, Fernando Alonso, his big issue when he was coming to the end of his first stint in Formula One, because he was with Renault, won two world championships there, went to McLaren, really clashed with the way that the team wanted to have he and Lewis Hamilton compete. So then Alonso leaves McLaren, and then in 2010 joins Ferrari and has a couple years where he's a title contender, but of course just gets put in the unlucky position of having to try to beat Sebastian Vettel when he was with Red Bull. And then he started going back to McLaren for his last few years and didn't get a podium in those last few years. And that, I think, was really, really frustrating. And you could hear just the frustration in his voice when he had those last few years with McLaren. 2015 through to 2018 was his last 4 years all with McLaren, and he didn't finish on the podium. His best finish was fifth a handful of times, but other than that, he was, you know, late, you know, back in the last few spots of the top 10, just scoring a few points or not scoring at all. And you know, there was a lot of frustration. I remember, I think it was the French Grand Prix in either 2017, I think it was actually 2018, when he just came on the radio, and it seemed like every other radio message was him wanting to retire from the race because he was just done being in a car that wouldn't win a championship. That was his big issue with McLaren during that time. Was, I mean, now with McLaren last season, seeing the year that Carlos Sainz had, and now moving to Mercedes engines next season, it looks like a team that's on the up and up. But when Fernando was back with them from 2015 to 18, it wasn't a team really competing at all to win a world championship. And so he's made the comment several times that he doesn't want to compete in Formula One if he's not going to be in a car to win a championship. And right now it seems as though the only car really open is Renault. We know that Mercedes Mercedes most likely going to retain Lewis Hamilton and either Valtteri Bottas or bring up George Russell to be his teammate at Mercedes. Ferrari has their duo in Leclerc and Sainz. Red Bull has their duo in Verstappen, and you would imagine Alex Albon. And McLaren seems to have their duo now in Lando Norris and Daniel Ricciardo. And those are really, I mean, with McLaren on the up and up, the only four teams that you can imagine having a driver able to win a championship. Although Renault is still a car that competes in the front of that mid-pack. It's been kind of down to McLaren or Renault to see who will finish fourth. But I just don't see Fernando Alonso winning a driver's championship in a Renault car. And the other four teams that you could imagine winning a driver's championship have their drivers already. So if Fernando Alonso really does not want to come back to a car that won't win a championship, then there's no point in coming back right now. Because the eight cars that could are taken. And as good as Renault might be, Renault, I think, is going to be on a bit of an island this year and in the coming years if they can't start to match the improvements that McLaren has made. And with McLaren jumping back to Mercedes engines, I think that gap is going to get a little bit bigger between McLaren and Renault and help McLaren kind of shorten the gap between them and the big three. So I think it's great that Fernando Alonso is looking to come back into Formula One. I think Formula One would love to have him back, but there just doesn't seem to be a championship-worthy car for him. If he comes back and goes to Renault, then, you know, what's the change from what he was doing at McLaren? He's going to finish maybe 7th, 8th, maybe 9th or 10th, but, I mean, top 5 finishes are going to be hard to come by when you're competing against Mercedes and Red Bull and Ferrari and whatever McLaren can do now moving forward before they switch back to Mercedes engines next year. So I think it's great that Fernando wants to come back, but a Renault isn't going to get him a championship. So it's kind of, you know, caught between a rock and a hard place right now. And especially with the Indy 500, he wants to compete in that and give himself a solid chance to try and win that and be a contender there and add that to his resume. And we know that he's been taking part in some WeatherTech sports car championship races, the 24 Hours at Daytona. He's competed at the 24 Hours of Le Mans in 2018 and 19. He was in the Dakar Rally earlier this year, finished 13th. But he's been active. He's been competitive. And we know that he has two, first place finish at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. So he's been very, very busy. And he's been, continuing to sharpen his tools. So if he can get back to Formula One in a championship car, then I think that's great, but I just don't think that's available right now. So as much as I would like to see him, and I think a lot of Formula One fans would like to see Fernando Alonso back, maybe wait another year. You know, maybe because regardless of what other seats might open, the 6 to 8 that are championship worthy are taken. And you know, if you don't want to come back and not be a championship contender, then just don't come back right now. You're going to have to wait a little while longer. Otherwise, I think he's just falling into the same boat. But we'll wait and see how that plays out. But that is exciting to see someone like Fernando Alonso wanting to come back to Formula One. Before we head to break, got some local news that I want to share with everybody. An exciting announcement here coming from the Reno Aces, seeing as how, unfortunately, we don't know the future of their baseball season this year. But that's not going to stop some fun announcements from coming out as the Reno Aces, New West Distributing and Hop Valley are proud to unveil the newest Ace Ball Ale. The blonde ale features a 5% alcohol by volume and will be available on tap at 2020 Aces games and for purchase outside of Greater Nevada Field in a 16-ounce can. Emily Jansen, obviously Reno Aces general manager, had this comment to say. She says, quote, "The creation of a Reno Aces beer has been a dream for a long time, and we found the perfect partner in local distributor New West Distributing and Hop Valley. The Blonde Ace Ball Ale is the perfect beer to enjoy outside during our beautiful Northern Nevada summers. We are thrilled to be able to bring the product home to you and look forward to a future where you can once again enjoy this delicious beer while taking in an Aces game at Greater Nevada Field," end quote. And I do hope that that day comes back around very, very soon. And of course, in celebration of the release, the Reno Aces team store is offering 30% off beer mugs and koozies until 11:59 p.m. today. So if you can get to the team store before 11:59, you can get yourself a nice beer mug or koozie. And then the store is open for online and curbside pickup orders as well. And then we have a quote here from Walter Macbeth, who is the Hop Valley partner. He said, quote, We here at Hop Valley Brewing are thrilled to release our first ever baseball brew in a can package, Ace Ball Ale. We are proud to partner with the Reno Aces and New West Distributing on this home run of a collaboration and excited that the Aces fans and the Reno community will be able to support the home team from home until we can get back to the ballpark, end quote. And it is. Any way you can kind of bring that feel of normalcy or a little bit of baseball or sports into your home, always a great way to go. And it sounds like this is going to be a great opportunity for that. And last year, the Ace Ball Ale was only available on tap at Greater Nevada Field and select local restaurants and bars. But now the ale is available to be taken home to enjoy. The crisp, approachable blonde ale boasts a light body and golden color, perfect for a day at the ballpark. Look for subtle hints of citrus and pine from Cascade and Williamette hops in every taste. We also have a quote here from New West Distributing General Manager Jim Brandt. And he said, quote, we couldn't find two better partners to bring this outstanding beer to market. We hope the Northern Nevada community will embrace this product like we have, end quote. And Ace Ball Ale is on sale now. Look for the beer at all 14 Raley stores in Reno, Incline Village, Carson City, Sparks, Gardnerville, Fernley, and Yerington. Additionally, the ale is on sale at the Northtown Lane and South Virginia Street Lee's Discount Liquor locations and Total Wine on South Virginia. So be sure to get out there and enjoy a nice Ace Ball Ale. Try to bring that feeling of baseball into your home as we hope to have that season back sooner than later. But we're going to take a break when we come back. The Last Dance, Episode 10. We will talk about how this great documentary series came to an end on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, the Last Dance has come and gone. All 10 episodes have aired. They've been talked about. They've been enjoyed. And now we move on. And what an interesting end to the documentary series, obviously, now focusing primarily on that 98 finals, the rematch between Chicago and Utah, and just what it all meant, how it all felt, and how it all went down. The first two games being there in Utah were back and forth between the two. And then, of course, game three saw Chicago blow Utah out. And then always just interesting, again, we've seen how, if you've seen any other of these 30 for 30s or any other maybe documentaries in the sports world, how if someone from this team or someone from this time in Chicago is mentioned and kind of all of what else was going on, then you see the story of this team. And when they go out to, use the example from yesterday talking about Reggie Miller and watching the 30 for 30 called Reggie Miller versus the New York. It was winning time, Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks. And seeing how Reggie Miller got under the skin of everybody in the New York Knicks organization, then seeing this story about Chicago, and again, seeing MJ run into Reggie Miller and getting in fights with him, and Reggie getting under MJ's skin, and how they would go back and forth kind of with their trash talking, and saw another type of crossover like that again in this final episode, because obviously I've made it clear on this show I'm a wrestling fan. If there's anybody out there that's seen the documentaries or the interviews about the Monday Night Wars in the 90s between the WWF and the WCW, and knowing what the NWO, what that meant to WCW, what Hogan, Hall, and Nash were doing at the time, really raking in the ratings for WCW and making them kind of must-see TV. And they touched on, in between Game 3 and Game 4 of the 98 Finals, how Dennis Rodman went, kind of on another excursion and went to a WCW show and was a part of the NWO for that short time span that he was a part of it. And again, just seeing how these players, these personalities, these people weren't just stars in the world of the NBA, but how much they transition over to pop culture or into a world like wrestling or into movies or whatever it might be. And it's just crazy to get that view again and to see, and honestly to get the kind of reaction from the team as well. I mean, it's amazing again after Dennis Rodman does this, right? After he misses practice, he goes and is a part of this wrestling show. Again, Phil Jackson knows the importance that Dennis Rodman plays to that team in terms of defense and hustle. And while he's not condoning it and he's not letting him off the hook, he's not just going to send him on his way and be like, you know what, we're done with it, be gone, because he knows who this man is. They've connected. They have that deep connection now. They've built over their Native American history and how they've spent time with tribes, what they've learned, and how they've grown because of that. And with that connection, you see how Phil Jackson just always knew the important role that Dennis Rodman played to that team and to the way that team operated. So incredible to see again how Phil stood up and again approached the media. And I love, there was one moment in that episode where either after that practice or maybe leading up to another practice, they were, you know, a reporter asked Phil Jackson, is this a distraction? Is Dennis Rodman taking away your focus of the finals? And Phil just looks at the reporter and goes, no, he's just taking away your focus. And that, again, just shows you the mentality that everyone on that team had, from MJ to Phil Jackson to Scottie Pippen to whoever. You know, they're going to stay focused on the goal at hand. And even though Rodman might be going on some excursion to Vegas or off to a wrestling show, they know what they need to do. And as soon as Rodman gets back there, he knows what he has to do to be a part of that team. And no matter what, it worked out again to a championship. And seeing how that 98 finals unraveled, seeing the way Pippen fought through his bad back, how MJ again just put the team on his shoulders and helped lead them to another championship. Then, of course, the end of the episode, listening to Reinsdorf and Phil and MJ talk about how a seventh title run was kind of sitting there as an opportunity, but Phil didn't want to put Jerry through that again and have him turn down his idea again. And you know, it was very interesting just to see how everyone kind of felt about the way that season ended. Even with MJ ending the episode off, talking about how, you know, if Phil was brought back for another year, if MJ was brought back for another year, if Kerr was brought back, then Pippen would want to come back, Rodney would want to come back, and there could have been a seventh championship. That may be one of the best shoulda, coulda, woulda situations in sports and in basketball, but nonetheless, it was an intriguing documentary series. If you didn't get a chance to watch, I know it's been talked about over and over again, but it won't do any justice unless you go see it for yourself. And just what a series, and what a look at a team and a franchise like no other during that time period, and really one that in basketball hasn't really been matched since. And I think, you know, maybe the Yankees run there at the late 90s, early 2000s, or the Patriots run with Belichick and Brady could be the only thing that you can really put up to what the Bulls did. I mean, 6 titles in 8 years, you're just not going to see something like that very often. Not even once in a generation, really. Once every other generation, you'll see something like that. So incredible to get the look. Awesome to get the look. Recommend you watch it if you haven't gotten a chance to see it. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take a look at some events that happened on this day in sports history here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
All right, as we wrap up this shortened Tuesday show, let's take a look at some events that happened on this day here. 1935, the NFL adopts an annual college draft that begins in 1936. And also in 1991, Willie T. Ribbs becomes the first African-American driver to make the Indianapolis 500 field. That is the show for today. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back on the air 2 o'clock tomorrow for the whole hour of the show. But coming up next is the special edition of the Coaches Show, so stay tuned for that. Have a great Tuesday. Peace.